This is Don Hossig with Cancer Action Network. You're listening to Loving the Earth Pollution-Free Revolution. Joining us today is Jeanette Sherman, MD. Good afternoon, Dr. Sherman.
Well, good afternoon to you, too.
Let's start right off with your introduction. You know, what? Tell the listeners who you are, what you've done, you know, convince them that you're the wonderful person to interview on this subject we'll be talking about today.
Well, that's hard to do that, but I'll do what I can.
I don't think so. Not with your credentials.
Well, I've been a physician since 1964. I graduated in medical school in Wayne State University in Detroit. And I have been involved in practicing medicine, seeing patients, writing, that sort of thing ever since. I'm particularly interested, I've got my advanced work in internal medicine and toxicology, and my particular interest is chemicals and nuclear radiation that cause cancer and birth defects.
What about those two books you wrote?
The first one actually came out in two different volumes with two different publishers. The first one is Chemical Exposure and Disease. And the latest edition was published by Princeton Scientific Publishing. And I wrote it after seeing approximately, 5,000 to 6,000 workers who were exposed to various and sundry toxic chemicals in the course of their work. The second book is called Life's Delicate Balance. It wasn't my choice of title, but it involves the chemicals, the pharmaceuticals, pesticides, nuclear radiation that cause particularly breast cancer. But everything, of course, that causes breast cancer also causes cancer in children and in men. So that was the third book, because Chemical Exposure and Disease came out with two different publishers.
I see. Well, I read Chemical Exposure and Disease quite some time ago, and regardless of how long ago it was, I remember it quite well. It was a very impressive book, and I just want to say honor to Dr. Sherman for writing these kind of books that help people to move forward on this path of dealing with all of this chemicals, all of this poison, all these disease-causing chemicals and agents. When we're talking about, you know, the radionuclides and the ionizing radiation. Thanks for doing that, and I'm honored to you. And hopefully this interview will contribute further to the public coming to a point where they can truly deal with, in the best means possible, with all these chemicals that they are exposed to constantly, that are parts of their bodies, that are parts of their children's bodies because of this, and, you know, that somehow we can turn this around and someday come to have a world where there aren't these, you know, not agreed to, you know, these just imposed upon us exposures to chemicals that no one knows anything about, and chemicals that people do know lots about and that are known to cause cancer, and yet we still get exposed to them as if, you know, it just doesn't matter. So,
well, people need to... my books are written for the public, not for the scientific community. And people need to get educated so they can protect themselves and their children. I mean, for people to say, well, we use these certain pesticide on our fields because the ag agent tells us the best thing to use is a little crazy if they don't find out for themselves what's in those pesticides and what they're doing to the environment and to themselves.
Exactly. Up here in this part of New York State, we are experiencing, see, the cancer data only becomes available from the New York State Department of Health after several years. It isn't right up to date. You know, we don't know what the cancer rates in 2009 were here in St. Lawrence County or any of these zip codes. But there's this one township, this township of Morristown, in the St. Lawrence River Valley, in the state of New York, in St. Lawrence County. And this woman, her name is Michelle Reed. She called me after she has her cancer case, her struggle with her victimization, with her suffering with cancer. She has colorectal cancer. She called me because she had been getting to know this doctor, Lucille Allison, who is the top cancer doctor, top oncologist at the Richard C. Winter Cancer Treatment Center in the city of Ogdensburg, New York, in St. Lawrence County, the nearest cancer treatment center to where she lives in this township of Morristown. She called me because Dr. Alston had said that she had read my letters to the editor about the cancer problems of this particular part of the state, you know, New York State in general, being higher than many other parts of the U.S. And so Michelle called me, and she started to just describe for me something that was, even after my long experience with the many crazy ways that people get exposed to carcinogens up here, she started to describe to me the situation that exists in the township of Morristown, which certainly is part of why there are excess cancer problems there that she is describing and that are not documented as far as, you know, what's happening right now in, say, 2008, 2009, 2010. She told me of so many, it was a large number, I think it was between 20 and 30 friends, acquaintances, relatives that had died of or were dying of cancer right now. And she hasn't even been up here all that long. It's shocking to me. I have actually gone to the point of contacting the public health officer for the city of Ogdensburg, Dr. Shalom, and requested that he would help us, you know, come into possession of the diagnoses, you know, how many people were diagnosed with new cancer cases during the year 2009 at this Winter Treatment Center, so that we can kind of try to get some understanding of how much cancer is really occurring in our area and not with this time lag of several years. Because the way she describes this, I think it's going to be an increase in the cancer for our area. There's lots of people up here talking about this now. Finally, you know, people have talked about this for years to me, but it wasn't all that many. Now there are more and more. I talked to a county legislator, and we have county governments and county legislatures here, and they're the, you know, like the top policymakers that we have any true access to. They're more, much more representative. I was talking to this county legislator, and she said, well, I heard that same thing from Dr. Alston. You know, I was partnering with a friend of mine that had breast cancer. I was there at this treatment center frequently, and I heard Dr. Alston say there was way too much cancer up here. It was something that was very shocking to her, and she was trying to figure it out. Well, your book, especially The Life's Delicate Balance, it's my understanding that you focus considerable amount of your, you know, expertise on the excess cancer problem that exists in New York State. Can you elaborate on that for us?
Well, not only New York State, particularly there's an entire chapter in my book on Long Island, because there was this study that was done a number of years ago on the high cancer rate in Long Island, which, of course, was fascinating because they spent $60 million and totally ignored radiation, and far as pesticides, only chose to study those that have been already taken off the market, so did not study any of the pesticides that are still currently in use. I also discuss the issue of being of the St. Lawrence River. I mean, you have to think of a map of North America, and the St. Lawrence River receives runoff from Lake Superior, Lake Michigan, Lake Huron, Lake Erie, Ontario, which then flows out to St. Lawrence. So all of the chemical pollutants that are flowing into the Great Lakes and all of the nuclear power plants that are along the Great Lakes are dumping their effluent into that water, and it's going out to St. Lawrence. We know, for instance, that the beluga whales of the St. Lawrence have cancer. Well, none of those whales smoke or drink, so we can't blame it on that.
Exactly.
There is a high rate of cancer along there, both in Canada and the United States.
We've noticed that.
Pardon me?
I said we've noticed that, yeah. We've been looking at some of the cancer data from across the river as well, and the Canadians certainly are experiencing this problem too.
Yes. I participated in a number of conferences in both Kingston and in Ottawa in regard to cancer, and there is a great concern about the cancer rate along the St. Lawrence. It's a sewage system for all of the chemicals and nuclear pollution that's running in through the Great Lakes.
Well, tell me then, in your expert opinion, is it healthy for the city of Ogdensburg, the city of Messina? These are, well, I guess Messina is a village.
Mm-hmm.
The city of Ogdensburg and the village of Messina and numerous other public entities up and down along the river, is it helpful for them to take their human, you know, people drinking water from the St. Lawrence River?
Well, I don't know what they're doing with their drinking water, whether they're...
All they do is filter it for, sediment. They don't do anything to remove the chemicals.
Oh, good grief. I did not know that. And, well,
but
I certainly wouldn't want to drink it.
I certainly wouldn't want to drink it. We've gone to them for years requesting that they just carefully look at this issue, and they just brush it off. They have no more interest in these matters as if they were, like, irrelevant.
The town?
The city of Ogdensburg, the
mm-hmm.
mayor, the council members, the public health officer, you know, the whole collection of them together as far as people that one would reach out to solve these kinds of problems. You see, we actually had the New York State Department of Health conduct a study where they looked at the cancer rates in the, I believe it was the city of Ogdensburg, the village of Messina, and I think maybe also, well, this Morristown, the village of Morristown also draws its water from the St. Lawrence River. And we had included Waddington at first, the village of Waddington, but it came to our knowledge that they actually got their water from wells that were in their township, so they weren't quite as relevant. But the data that New York State Department of Health reported back to us was that there were indeed high levels of some of these environmental cancers. Bladder cancer was higher in the city of Ogdensburg. Some very rare brain cancers were higher in the city of Ogdensburg. There was certainly good scientific data upon which to base a concern and an investigation, but there was never any investigation. The Department of Health provided us with the data, and yet no one ever took it upon themselves to start trying to discover why there were these high cancer rates there, and if the consumption of water that contains arsenic and lead, you know, at levels that are not natural, normal levels for surface waters, and that contain PCBs and dioxins, and that have fish swimming in them, that are the New York State Department of Health, the very same entity that provided us with the cancer data, advises girls and women of childbearing age not to consume any meals of fish from the Great Lakes or the St. Lawrence River because of the presence of dioxins in their bodies. So, you know, we're just trying so hard to find some big partners in investigating these problems that exist here in our part of New York State. And you, having written that book and the second book, especially this Life's Delicate Balance, which I have not read and which I'm so happy that you have mailed to me and that I will be reading very soon, we're hoping that will help us move forward with this.
I would hope that the people in these towns in Ogdensburg and Messina would themselves say, we're tired of seeing this cancer epidemic. We have to do something about this, because if they don't put pressure on the mayor, on the public health officers and the boards, nothing is going to get done. They have to be the noisy people and marching in the streets.
But you know what has prevented that from happening? This is a very kind of tightly controlled by business interests society here in this part of New York State. I'm sure it's that way to a degree everywhere. And maybe we're not the worst, but we're certainly in the top 10, so to speak. My experiences with this, in about the 1980s, I began to be an environmental activist. And the first project that I worked on was a proposal to construct and operate a countywide solid waste incinerator in the city of Ogdensburg, you know, on the outskirts of the city of Ogdensburg. It was right upwind about, and this upwind thing I'm certain is very relevant to this whole discussion. This incinerator was being sited so that its high impact area would have been very close to the farm where we raised cattle, we raised dairy replacement heifers, we actually produced some milk and kind of sold it under the table. And we were dairy farmers. My dad was a veterinarian. He taught us about farming. We came from a farming background in Ohio. And, you know, it was important to us, and we put a lot of our energies into it. And to think that they were just going to start dumping all the trash in the air, with actually much worse, by burning it first and creating these dioxins and diophthalmic compounds, and then have the high impact of that being, you know, near our beloved home farm, you know, we were very opposed to that, so we kind of fought that. And then the thing that really got us in hot water and caused government and the news media here to frown upon us and treat us very, very, very badly was we opposed the construction of a $136 million oriented strand board facility that was to be operating on the very same ground that this incinerator that they proposed and we beat.
What kind of a facility? I couldn't catch the name.
Oriented strand board. You know, the OSB?
Strand
oriented,
board?
Oriented strand board. It's a building material. It's called OSB for short. You know, it's those flakes of wood that are glued together with the various types of glue that either, it used to be the urea formaldehyde, and now it's like another formaldehyde-based glue.
Oh, okay,
and
sure, I understand.
They were proposing, they had this huge furnace. They proposed to burn approximately 1,000 tons per day of green wood and wood dust from green wood to produce the heat that would dry the green wood flakes sufficiently so that they could be glued back together again. And we just said no. You know, we said there are already huge cancer problems in this county. This was in 2000 they were proposing this. We'd already discovered there were really high cancer problems in this county. We said not one more major source of cancer-causing air pollution in the St. Lawrence River Valley. That was kind of our battle cry. And so, you know, we went through that. We got arrested numerous times for doing nothing that was even close to illegal. It was just that they created the illusion that we were these troublemaking, crazy environmental wackos, is what they called us, you know, just because we proposed to stop that factory when there was already too much cancer here. So now I think you're starting to begin to get the picture of what I'm talking about.
Who owned the company?
It was, they called it Chatham Forest Products. It was this entrepreneur that had got these mills going. He had one going up in Miramichi, Quebec. He got one going up there, which had huge problems. They had to, I think, actually build a new smokestack for the thing. It was this whole matter of lying. This businessman, this entrepreneur, came here to St. Lawrence County. The first news story I ever heard about this was small family-owned, you know, South Carolina wood products company proposes to have a factory here in St. Lawrence County.
South Carolina company.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
and
there's a lot of wood products companies in South Carolina, and they get away with murder.
Yep. And I was thinking, this is going to be a furniture factory. They'll use wood from this area. This will be good, you know. But then, fortuitously, I took a look at the application for this wood products company, mm-hmm. and as soon as I saw it was going to be a strand board, an oriented strand board mill, and that all this combustion, see, the combustion has always been our concern up here. Since we saw that this was not going to be making furniture, this was going to be burning green wood to dry green wood to make, you know, so you can glue back together again to make a building material, we stopped it. We brought three lawsuits against them, pro se lawsuits, and we stopped them. But in the meantime, the media, you know, and the, you know, the politicians, they grew to hate us because, you know, this was Governor Pataki. We had Governor Pataki at that time in New York State. He's a Republican governor that had about three terms under his belt. He had come up with this, like, Build New York Now program, and this was the flagship, you know. This was the first one of those little babies that was coming out there to, like, get this reindustrialization of New York State done. And we sunk their flagship, and they certainly don't like us because of that. And we've kind of, like, built back some bridges and got some things reestablished here where the county legislatures now are friendly, and they'll talk about... It's so wonderful, the vibe now. They're finally talking about preventing cancer up here, and we're really happy to see it taking place, you know, moving in that direction. But you need to understand some of the history, because it's going to take a million small steps. There are no big steps up here. We go to our governments and we say, will you take a small step today to prevent cancer? And then we lay out a million small steps, you know, for them in 5 minutes, and then they choose one of the steps, but then they start backtracking as we proceed, and eventually the small step is even smaller. So you know what I mean? It's just this very frustrating, very slow, very painful process to prevent cancer up here.
Well, what about the people whose family members are having cancer? Are they interested in mobilizing and, you know, and finding out exactly how bad things are? You know, one of the lead cases that happened in the United States, of course, is Love Canal, which was near Niagara Falls and
yep.
also in New York State.
Yep, we're so far from there. See, we're about 300 miles from Buffalo.
No,
these
no,
people,
but that's, it's the same state, though.
I know, but it's, like, different. Somehow it's different. They don't seem to like to look at things that way. I'm telling you the truth. I lived here my whole life. I came here when I was 5 years old. I moved out for, like, you know, my dad moved his working place down to Ohio for, like, a couple of years. That's the only time I've been gone, really. 2 years, maybe, like, when I was 12 years old or something. But I've been here the rest of the time. I know this place very, very, very well. And it is a place that is certainly far behind the curve on pollution and disease. And it's because they say, this is their mantra, jobs at any cost. And they don't say that, but it's the truth. Because they told me, they said, well, we'll accept the cancer problem. You know, it's jobs at any cost. We don't care, no matter what.
You're absolutely right, because let me explain something. When people tell me it's jobs, I say, oh, hey, you're absolutely right, because the jobs include chemotherapy nurses, grief counselors, grave diggers, tombstone makers, physicians, hospital employees, home care workers, school psychiatrists to deal with children whose parents have died. I mean, yes, it provides lots and lots of jobs. I couldn't
Huge.
Agree more.
Yeah, but this part, the no-cost part of what I don't like.
Which
we
one?
Are all for jobs.
Mm-hmm.
We feel like that there are good, healthy jobs which could be created by the very things we're talking about. They could put everyone to work as cancer detectives up here and pay them just a small amount and truly, in the end, save so much money on the Medicaid and Medicare costs that they incur by paying these diseases.
Do you have any allies at all up there?
Well, here's what we have. We have a tiny group. It's called Cancer Action New York. We have a radio program, which you're participating in right now, and we just love all these people from the outside that are willing to talk to us about pollution and cancer. And sometimes this is truly the coolest it's gotten yet, because now we're talking about pollution and cancer right here in St. Lawrence County. And we haven't really talked about that before, and we're going to talk about it a lot more because things are shaping up now. The allies that I could describe say there's a public library, and this director, Wayne Miller, he has invited us to work with youth there to, like, get them into the cancer detective business, you know, for free, you know, kind of volunteer cancer detectives, and that's what we all are, so this Michelle Reed and I, you know, we're volunteer cancer detectives, so certainly we can, like, help them learn how to be that. And at SUNY Potsdam, where I graduated summa cum laude back in 1977, I wish it was.
Where was it? Which college?
SUNY, State University of New York, College of Potsdam. Had a wonderful biology and chemistry program that I majored in, double majored in. And then I went off to veterinary college, just did not fit in. Did not want to become that kind of a businessman. And so I got out of there, and I just started trying to solve environmental problems and damages to health that were occurring up here in this part of New York State. So we've been in that for now, like, about, you know, several decades, probably 30-some years. And in the process of that, we have found some allies. We've gradually built a stronger and stronger relationship with the St. Lawrence County Planning Office and their employees, which are forward-thinking and want to solve some of these problems. They are under a lot of control from the dairy industry, because you see, the dairy industry is second only. The three big industries here, you know, the three big money makers are the Aluminum Company of America, which used to operate, well, Alcoa.
What Company of America? I couldn't hear it.
Aluminum Company of America.
Aluminum? Okay.
Yeah, the Alcoa facility. And they have their issues. You know, they emit considerable quantities of dioxin, being the chlorinated dioxins, and they've never tested how much of the brominated or fluorinated dioxins they would be putting out. despite the fact that there's a lot of fluorine in their emissions, and certainly there'd be more fluorinated dioxins, I suspect, than chlorinated dioxins, because there's not that much chlorine in the process. But anyways, they get their issues, and they have a lot of power. They have about 1,000 employees, or they used to anyways. And they rule, it's kind of like Alcoa County in many ways. So many times when we raise these pollution and disease issues, you know, they have a influence on what kind of result we get. Then there's the dairy industry. It is the, I think it's the largest, truly the largest source of all monies, the biggest part of the economic pie in St. Lawrence County. And see, they are very much disliking us for talking about pesticides that are carcinogenic and in the surface waters, probably in the groundwaters. We don't need money. We don't have any money for testing this. It's just that we, you know, we think about the logics and the reasonableness and the what could possibly explain this problem. And then, you know, we propose doing something about these things, and they don't like that. This open trash burning, it's truly had two effects. This trash burning is considered by EPA to be the number one source of dioxins in the whole U.S. right now. And we've been battling open waste burning in St. Lawrence County and New York State since 1997. And finally, in October of 2009, the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation did a regulation that banned trash burning statewide, largely because of the work that we did here in this part of New York State, because we went all over. We went to Clinton County, which is way over on the eastern border of New York State, and
By trash burning, do you mean commercial trash burning or individual trash burning?
I mean people in their backyards having 55-gallon drums they burn trash in, the whole mix, you know, plastic, paper, synthetic, this and that. It's burning nylon, burning Teflon, burning, you know, rugs, burning just everything. And if it's too big to go in the barrel, they dump it on the ground and they burn it on the ground. And if it's way too big in the ground to go in a barrel, the farmers, see these farmers up here, they considered it to be their privilege and their right and their need to make a living duty, so to speak, to be a good businessman. They had to burn this trash. There are so many dump sites on farms that they regularly, it's not a landfill, it's a dump and burn, whatever you want to call it. So this was going on heavily in the 1990s. And backing down a little bit because we started talking to farmers and just asking them to get the dumpsters in there, get the trash off the farm, don't dump it there, don't burn it there, don't do anything with it there, just get it out of there. There's so much plastic in their waste streams. So we began to have some successes. You know, the really cool thing is now, in having dealt with that trash burning in this kind of upfront, we told them, you're poisoning the very food you produce with dioxins because the dioxins come out of the air. They get in the cattle's feed, the cattle eat it, it's lipophilic, they store it in their bodies, and then you're selling it to your neighbors. And, you know, they understood that. They're not bad people. They just need to be educated. Many of them got the trash pickup, stopped burning the trash, and now it's become so good that when we go to a town board meeting, we've begun bringing these resolutions before town boards that ask them to go on the record publicly that they are calling upon the New York State government and the government of the United States of America to put together an educational program that would educate all New Yorkers, all Americans, about the presence of carcinogenic, persistent organic pollutants, including dioxins, in the U.S. food supply, in the animal fat, all the animal fat is in the U.S. food supply. So the town of Lisbon did that, even though the supervisor is a dairy farmer. The town board member who brought the resolution, who, you know, called up the resolution, you know, made the motion to have it introduced, is a young dairy farmer who has his whole future ahead of him. They care about the cancer problem here so much, they voted unanimously to have the government tell the public that they should reduce their consumption of the food they sell because of what's in the animal fat. And we're just so happy about that.
Which government are going to do the tolling?
The town government of Lisbon asked the New York State government and the federal government to tell the people about this problem.
Well, are they going to do it?
No.
No. Then you can't. You can't tell them. I mean, you cannot hope that the federal government is going to do this. They're not going to. I mean, the only people who are going to be able to educate people are the locals. you know, the local people have got to do this.
I understand that, but we're hoping to trap them. We're getting all these governments to say, see, they won't say it about local people. They wouldn't say, they wouldn't pass a resolution. I don't believe they would do a say, would Lisbon have passed a resolution saying, let Cancer Action educate about this? See, they don't honor us that quite that much. These governments truly believe that government is good. We're going to just try to convince the federal government and the state government to be as good as these local governments and do the right thing here. Just do what science would lead one to do, not what all their connections with big money has forced them to do, but what science would cause them to do to protect the public health. We're very hopeful about this, and, you know, who knows? The neat story is that we've been doing this since January, and yet there's been not one peep about this, not one word about this on a radio station, in a newspaper, except for my letter to the editor. Nothing from any of the commercial or the public. We have public radio up here, and we have public TV up here, but they're not all that public because they will not report about these 7 resolutions that we've gotten passed since January of 2010 on this matter of where is the education going to come from. We want it to come. I want them to do their job. I want to force the state of New York and the federal government, the National Cancer Institute, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, I want to force them from the grassroots up to do the job that they are supposed to do as far as preventing cancer by using science. They must
Lots
do it.
Lots of luck.
Well, I'm going to keep trying. You're helping us right now, you know, because this radio program doesn't get a huge amount of traction, but I think the people that listen to it are thinkers, and that's all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we usually get about 40, 50 people listening to each individual program,
mm-hmm.
and we keep talking about the same thing a million different ways, so I'm thinking that it's kind of getting out there.
Well, I think that you have to do, you know, they say think globally but act locally.
Yep.
My experience working with a number of dump site people and Love Canal and other and Long Island and other groups is that only change has come through the local effort.
Yep.
I mean, the federal government at right now is practically unmovable. If you've been reading what's going on, the federal government is thought to exempt the National Rifle Association from any reporting requirements. Now, the federal government is, as far as I can see these days, is wholly owned by big corporations. So
well,
I think
totally
the only way you're going to get anywhere is with local education.
Well, see, the only reason that we haven't gone that road only, see, I kind of believe in many having money fronts. I actually was talking to this lady, I'm not going to use her name, but she works for the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences.
Mm-hmm.
And she said to me, she's a media person with them, she said, you're different. You know, like, she didn't quite get me, you know, she doesn't quite understand what I'm all about. I believe in starting a lot of little fires and then running around keeping them all going so that there's not just one thing going on at a time. So I contacted the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They have a division of cancer prevention and control that is instrumental. It totally leads the whole national cancer control program that the states and the tribes are supposed to pick up on and do their own cancer control plans. Well, they have a thing called the promotional toolkit, and it shows a black guy playing tennis. It talks about sunlight and diet and exercise and obesity. Not one word about poison in that whole thing, you know.
Absolutely,
well,
that's correct. And neither National Cancer Institute. And neither does the American Cancer Institute.
Right.
They never talk about carcinogens.
Right. And so for a long time, I had been trying to get them to change that and to, you know, revise this promotional toolkit so the whole story was in there. So it was comprehensive. They call it comprehensive cancer control, but it's very incomprehensive because it's the message that industry wants the public to have about cancer causation. So I've been working on that for quite a while, but then I really got excited about it. I spent a lot of time calling a bunch of people in CDC. And finally, this lady from NIEHS said to me, they think you want to destroy them. And I thought, yeah, well, that's true. I do want to destroy them because they're not doing their job. They need to just be eliminated so that somebody else will take their place and do this properly using science to prevent cancer. and all their money and all their infrastructure and all their prestige and everything else, all there. But they didn't do a thing. They have not done a thing. What they told me was, okay, forget it. The promotional toolkit is old hat. You know, we're not going to use it anymore. Forget about that thing, you know. We're just not going to do anything with that because we don't even use it anymore. Well, I think they still use it. I know they do, but whatever. They just don't want to do anything. So then we started focusing on the ATSDR, which we thought was maybe a little better than this Division of Cancer Prevention and Control, but still in CDC. And we started reading all the dioxin documents that ATSDR, this Agency for Toxic Substance and Disease Registry, had put together over the years, the ones that were still out on the web, and we started finding these terrible flaws in them. But they were the flaws that industry would have wanted to be in them, and I don't think it's a coincidence that they are in them. For example, they tell mothers and fathers that the way to protect their children from dioxin exposure is to tell them to wash their hands when they've been playing in hazardous waste sites. We said to them, well, what about telling the mothers and fathers not to bring home the animal fat to put on the table because those kids, whether their hands are clean or not, are going to be eating the dioxin, and that is the way that 90-some percent, 95% actually, of the exposure takes place according to US EPA, which is a part of your same federal government. So we find these documents that are just like so crazy and so confusing and deliberately deceiving that we challenge them. And no, they have not. It has been months and months and months. No changes in these documents.
And they aren't going to either.
Probably not, but we've put together a report now on all these little bad-behaving industrial lab dogs. And
did you publish it?
Yep. We've put it out to several news organizations, and we still haven't found one that has written about it yet, but we're working on this. You know, we're doing our best. My dad always said, do the best you can. I'm a son of a veterinarian that was a son of a coal miner that died when my dad's father died when my dad was like 2 or something, so died of an infection in his hand. And so, you know, we aren't, you know, like kind of silver spooners, or we're not kind of top flight or anything. We have to start out right at the very bottom and do the best we can. And I'm doing that, you know, one day at a time, and I love doing it. It's made me very, 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 very strong. Strong enough to do whatever has to be done to fix this, because I'm not happy with living in a country where the federal government, that government has all the money and all the power, is merely an octopus's arm, tentacle, many tentacles really, of these horrible corporate entities, which I look upon as overlords. I see them nothing differently than the French Revolutionary peasants saw the horrible, horrible barons and, you know, whatever they called them back then. Hate these people. They have ruined the world that I love. They've made it very dangerous, very scary. I worried about having cancer and getting cancer after reading all those Reader's Digest articles back in the 70s and 80s. I wasted a lot of my life worrying about that before I wakened up and started trying to figure out what the problem was. I don't worry about it anymore. I love being a cancer detective and also being a cancer revolutionary and fighting as hard as I can against these overlords. So what you're saying to me, I understand what you're saying, that it's not wise to put all your eggs in one basket or to only have one fire going, but I just kind of feel like it's the right thing to do, you know, to try to force these bad government people to reform themselves, to throw off these overlords and do the right thing sooner or later. I just feel better about not letting them off the hook because we have such a small group. The education we do is truly very small, and we run into all these obstacles. The schools up here, after me and our group, Cancer Action New York, having opposed that chipboard factory in a very kind of honorable and strong way, they say, you are not welcome in our school. We see you as a threat to these students. And the reason they
see... Which school is this?
The Parrishville, it's called the Hopkinton Parrishville Central School District School. The superintendent's name is Darren Safe.
So
the
he
president
says
of the school
you're not
board.
Welcome to come and teach the students?
The president of the school board's name is Ward Remington. They told me that there were student safety issues involved with me being present in their school when I proposed to conduct an information table on poison and cancer. And it is because the county government here in St. Lawrence County, which didn't want me to fare very well in fucking with power, they wanted me to look like a crazy, dangerous person, so they took my handgun license away, which I obtained when I was 17 years old because my grandfather was a hunter, my father was a hunter.
Well, would you
I
carry your gun to the school?
No. That wasn't it wasn't that. No, that wasn't it. They took my handgun license away and put a lot of newspaper articles out about it to create the illusion that I carried guns to environmental activist events, you know, various board meetings and various protests and various, all the things that we did, various poetry readings, various, you know, dangerous dancing performances, you know, that I carried guns to those things because that would make it look like I was crazy. I never carried any guns to those things. It was all the creation of an illusion to cover the illusion that the public has that government is in this for protecting the public. It's a lie. And it's really lied about me to maintain their illusion. And they have a lot more power than I have. So many people up here, I'm not saying they're all bad. Good old, the town of Canton, which is in the county seat, they were the first township to pass our resolution, that resolution I described to you about education from the big government to help out here where the poison has caused so much cancer, which is the whole country, really, but in our area as well. They were the first town board to pass that resolution, and I'm just saying honor to the town of Canton for ignoring all these lies about our group, for ignoring all the bad vibe and all the difficulties, and just sticking with the science,
well,
believing us, you know, honoring us, truly.
Well, rather
really
than
cool.
go to the school, can you just, how many students in this? How many students are there in this school?
Well, that school
about.
Is pretty big. It's probably got about several hundred. But see, even the town of Canton, this is very tightly controlled. The town of Canton, which has such a good positive attitude toward our group and toward me in particular,
mm-hmm.
I know the environmental science teacher at the Canton School. His name is Tom Vanderwater. I know him very well. I've known him for years, probably like 20 years. And he's very good to me. He invites me, despite this bad, you know, rap, you know, this bad reputation that I have in certain parts of the county, he invites me to come and speak to his students, so I get to speak to them. He's invited me. I have actually conducted an information table, a dancing performance information table, in the Canton School with the Environmental Club students sitting right there beside me at the table. And that has gone very well. The kids were, like, very excited about it. But the problem is, it's still a small number of students. Maybe, like, I don't know how many students. They didn't even pick up the brochures, a whole lot of them, that we had at the information table. So I'm thinking maybe, like, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 students maybe at the Canton School by word of mouth and by reading our literature on these things have some idea about the cancer risk that is imposed by eating animal fat, but not many more than that. So I contacted the superintendent of the school. His name is Gregory, William Gregory, and I asked him if he would facilitate a presentation to the school board on the need to do a bigger step, you know. Like, surely we can't just keep doing this year to year. There's got to be, like, an assembly or an event where more kids will get involved with cancer prevention that focuses on reducing exposure to pollutant carcinogens. And he just said to me, the board's not interested. And I'm thinking, well, see, this is the problem. They're not interested because they probably, half of them, think I'm some kind of wacko or whatever they want to describe this, use this word to apply to environmentalists they don't like.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult, and so we just kind of feel like we have to have other, you know, it would be very frustrating. I wouldn't be happy. I like feeling like we get a lot of fires going, a lot of fronts opened up, and that maybe there'll be some good thing turn out here and there, and, you know, with the government, with one of these government entities, with these different schools, you know, we just try to hit a lot of them. And so your advice, I'm going to take it. We will focus more and more because it's the right time for it. Now it doesn't feel so painful trying to bring cancer prevention education that deals with pollution here in St. Lawrence County. There's more and more good vibe in the local area now, and we have invited, well, I've talked to you about this, you know, before we were doing the interview. I've invited Dr. David Carpenter to come and speak to the St. Lawrence County kind of public in an event that is co-sponsored by our group, by the St. Lawrence County Management, you know, St. Lawrence County Planning Office and the St. Lawrence County Environmental Management Council. They've all come on board in creating a moment like that for St. Lawrence County to talk about pollution and cancer. So I'm really happy to be working with them. So this is going to get more local and more local all the time. And you are perfectly welcome to make a distance presentation at this forum. It's going to take place this fall sometime. We're really hopeful that that will create a huge leap forward for our county as far as preventing cancer that's caused by pollution.
if anybody is interested in reading more about known causes of cancer, they can go to my website and order my book, which I sent you a copy of the book, Lifestyle at the Balance. And if anybody who's listening wants to go to www.JanetteSherman.org all lumped together, Janette Sherman, S-H-E-R-M-A-N.com. They can find out about my book. It's only $10 plus some shipping. And it talks about multiple causes of cancer, including dioxins, dibenzofurans, certain pharmaceuticals, pesticides, and nuclear radiation. And they can get educated about this.
Well, it's going to be so good when this all comes together. And just to pull it back a little bit to this, these individual victims, you cannot imagine how this Michelle Reed has inspired me. You know, I've been doing this for years, decades, and yet to encounter her excitement, her hardworkingness, her willingness to just, like, do such... She's told me about times when she went and replaced tires on cars that were slashed by people that didn't like her making... She and I and this girl that live in a low rental income property went to a town board meeting in this Morris town and spoke out about the landlord burying solid waste within a few feet of wells, drinking water wells, on his property, and then these tenants getting sick, having concerns. We spoke out about that, and didn't it the same week, this one girl that spoke out, the same girl that was at the board meeting, two tires, one car, one parking lot, one day, slash tires, you know. So Michelle actually went there and helped her change the tires in her car to keep going forward with this. Michelle had her dog poisoned with antifreeze put in Hamburg. It was unreal what they did to her in 1 week after she came forward with this. And she says, like, bring it on, you know. She has no fear whatsoever. She's so cool. She has constantly contacted. She told me yesterday... Well, she told me the day before yesterday that yesterday she was going to walk right into the office of the director of this Winter Cancer Treatment Center and just demand that he help us educate the public about what causes cancer
maybe,
up here.
Maybe that's the way to go, is with the Cancer Treatment Center, with the people there. I want to thank you for having me on your program. I see our time is about up.
Okay.
And so if we're going to close, I want to give you one statement off the record after we close.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Sherman.
You're welcome.
I love you. You're a wonderful person for doing this good work. And I'm sure that we will have many future moments to say, Viva the Revolution.
Okay, and let's hope that some of your listeners are interested in reading the definitive information about known causes of cancer, not suspected, but ones that we already know.
You bet.
Thank you so much.
Yep, thank you. Bye.
Bye.